Today, this is our second Sunday of the Recovery Series. My name is Elizabeth Lopina, and I am the current chair of the committee. We meet on a somewhat monthly basis, and our goal is to educate our parishioners about addiction. And I'll go ahead and read our mission statement so you have a better idea of what we do. The mission of the St. Paul's Recovery Committee is to educate our parishioners about the disease of addiction and the paths to recovery, with the goal of fostering a caring and approachable congregation supportive of those who are affected by this devastating illness. Today we have with us again Homer, who works with an AA organization who coordinates events like this. He's going to come up and introduce our speakers for today. And again, I'm glad to see you all, and I appreciate you being here. Thank you.
Thank you, Elizabeth. I'm an alcoholic, and my name is Homer, and I'm grateful to be here this morning and grateful to have this opportunity to have two AA speakers to share a bit of their recovery experience. They'll do a short version of what we call what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I just want to also mention we have AA literature up here, so at the end of the meeting, I'll be up here, be happy to provide you with any information. If you have a family member or a loved one that you're concerned about, we have information for that. And then we also have information for you. With that, I would like to introduce Daniel. Daniel is a member of the Young People's Group here in Winston-Salem, and he has a few years of sobriety and lots of recovery. Daniel? Oh, and let me just mention one other thing on anonymity. You know, please respect the individual anonymity of the individuals that share their story today, and that's the kind of the only requirement that we have in what we consider an open speaker meeting. Just protect and consider, respect their personal anonymity. Thank you.
Thanks, Homer. Good morning. Can everybody hear me okay? My name is Daniel, and I am an alcoholic, and feels like home. Excuse me. I've been in this area most of my life. I had a pretty quote-unquote normal upbringing. I had a great family, very loving. I'm sorry. Had a very loving family. I had an extended family that really sort of made a point to see each other. You know, even though they lived across the country, we still do that today. I have a cousin that's coming from Hawaii for Thanksgiving, which is kind of cool. Sorry. Thank you. So I have a cousin that's coming from Hawaii for Thanksgiving, which is pretty cool. And I say that just because I think one of the misconceptions about a lot of folks that are in AA is that there was a lot of underlying issues that brought them in there. But in my case, you know, the first time that I tried alcohol, I knew right then that it was very powerful, at least to me. I didn't know if it was the same for me as it was for everyone else, but I knew that beyond the effect that it gave you, it just was a very powerful thing for me. And I did a pretty good job of trying to stay away from it. It was the second big thing that sort of got my attention and said, you're going to need to be careful. The first was stray dogs. I just kind of stay away from those. But I managed to do that for a while. I got all the way through my first year of college. I realized after my first year of college that the timing wasn't right for us, and me and college were going to have to revisit at another time. And I came back and started working in the real world, and that's kind of where my drinking sort of picked up. And for about 15 years, it just got to the point where I was completely isolated. I didn't leave my house. I could barely keep a job. I didn't have really any possessions at all. I was, you know, just trying to keep landlords off my back long enough to find somewhere else to go for years. I got to the point where I was afraid that, I was not afraid of dying. I was afraid that I was going to live the rest of my life this way and that there was nothing I was going to be able to do about it. And not even really on my own decision. I ended up in a treatment center, mainly because I had nowhere else to go. But I ended up being there for about 18 months, and it completely saved my life. For the first 2 or 3 months that I was there, I didn't want to be there, but for whatever reason, I stayed. And, you know, by the time I came out of it, my personality had changed to the point where I was a lot more willing to do something different. And I'd gotten involved in AA. And just being around the folks that understood exactly what I was going through was the biggest impact that I had up to that point. And, you know, it wasn't like AA really, I mean, that alcohol had really taken a lot of things from me. I never was able to acquire them, you know. I never had them to begin with. So that really wasn't a big deal for me. I didn't have the family or any of that other stuff. And so when I came into AA, I literally had what I was wearing, and that was it. But, you know, over time, you know, the folks there, they loved me until I could love myself, you know. And, you know, it's given me a life today that's just been beyond anything I could have ever imagined. I really didn't think I was going to live past 30. I thought something would happen, you know, either alcohol was going to kill me or something else would. But, you know, today, forgive me, I've got some spots on me. I've got two little girls that like to leave you with something when they hug you goodbye. You know, stuff. I've got a family today. I went back to school, and I've got the job I always wanted, and, you know, all that stuff is cool, but I don't have that hole in my soul anymore, and it put me in a position to, you know, develop a relationship with God, which I really did everything I could to avoid growing up. You know, I did grow up in a church, and it was one of the first things that I wanted to end when I got away from my parents, and I did. And you know, A was actually the thing that helped bring me back around. It helped me clear out a lot of that stuff. But the support from the folks that were, you know, the part of this organization is the thing that really kind of had the biggest impact on me. So, thank you.
Hi, I'm Rebecca, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi,
can you hear me okay? I guess, okay. I did have a very chaotic childhood, which was a little bit different than Daniel. I have, I'm the oldest of three siblings. My father is a semi-retired Baptist minister, so I grew up going to church all the time. Anytime the church doors were open, I was there. So I really kept most of my drinking didn't start until high school, and it really wasn't anything. I didn't have like a magical moment the first time I drank. I felt like it was probably just like the other kids that were experiencing what I was experiencing. You know, I did black out early on, and I think that was something to me that I've noticed, you know, a lot of people in AA experience right away, and I did do that, but I just thought everybody else probably did that as well. I didn't realize it was something different. I went to college and did actually kept most of my drinking under control, and for most of my life, I was able to do that. I was primarily a binge drinker. I would have a big night out here and there. I would have big weekends here and there, but probably if you were around me, you would have never realized that there was an issue. It really did start to become noticeable once I was in my late 30s. My mother was diagnosed with ovarian cancer, and she and I, you know, I still had a lot of deep resentments towards especially my mother from growing up. So when I think that illness came about, that was I didn't know how to deal with it. I had no idea how to deal with all the emotions that I was feeling. And I remember when she was in surgery, I came to stay with her along with my sister, and I started my daily drinking then. And that is what I used from that point on to deal with all of my emotions, whatever it might be. Happiness, sadness, boredom, fear, whatever it was, that became my coping mechanism. And I didn't stop drinking once I left my mother's home after her surgery. And she ended up getting better and recovering, but that was really the start of my downward spiral. As I got into my 40s, my early 40s, I would drink every single night. I could easily have a few beers, two bottles of wine, a few more beers before I'd go to bed. And I could wake up the next morning, get the children to school, really not have a hangover. My body became used to consuming that much alcohol. And most people around me didn't have any clue that what was going on, unless you happened to be with me at those moments that I was drinking that way. My family ended up having an intervention for me. I'm not sure I would have ever sought treatment on my own. I was truly trying to slowly kill myself. I felt like if I could get to the point where my children would be old enough that they would not need me any longer, then I would be okay with dying. And that's really what I was trying to achieve. So my family had the intervention. I was so angry about that at the moment. I went with the lady who did the intervention just to get away from everyone. I really didn't know what treatment was about. But once I got to the treatment facility, I decided, well, I'll try it for a week. I'll see what happens because I'm really out of options. I don't know what else to do. I can't stop drinking on my own. I really had not had a relationship with God or with the higher power, even though I'd been in church most of my life. It just never happened for me. So at that point, I remember asking God, if you're real and if this is where I'm supposed to be, I need some really obvious signs to let me know that this is where the right path. And God did that for me. It might not have been apparent to anyone else around me, but I knew that those were the signs that I had asked for. Once I got out of treatment, of course, I came back, and it was a 12-step based treatment facility. We went to a lot of AA meetings while I was there, and so when I came back, I continued to do that. And it was hard to kind of get transitioned back into real life as a sober person when I came back to Winston-Salem. I was gone for 35 days. And my marriage was, I thought, over. Before I left, I was about to lose my children. I was about to lose everything if I hadn't sought treatment. So I did. My husband did agree to let me move back into our home as long as I stayed sober and kept going to meetings and got a sponsor. And so I did those things. I started really working on myself and my sobriety. I found in AA people that had gone through exactly what I had gone through. And I really thought I was the only person in the world that had experienced those things. And that was just life-saving for me to meet those people, connect with those people, and not realize that I was alone. I found a really good home group, Back to Basics, where I felt people cared about me and would be there for me no matter what I might need or what might come up in my life. And it was the steps also that have helped keep me sober today, the 12 steps that you hear about in Alcoholics Anonymous. So the main things I've learned is that life is manageable. I don't have to use alcohol to cope with the things that life throws at me. I never really understood what serenity was until I became active in the program. And a quote that I like to read is that serenity is not freedom from the storm, but peace amidst the storm. And that's really how I try to live my life today. It's not always going to be a happy, joyous, and free journey, but today life is manageable, and I've learned to live life on life's terms through the help of AA. Thank you.
little bit less than we had anticipated. Last week we ran out of time, didn't have time for questions. I would like to take just a couple of minutes and talk a little bit about the disease of alcoholism. And I want to do this because I had an experience this past week that with family member about the disease
of alcoholism, and it was amazing to me, you know. And I've been sober now almost 20 years, and sometimes I lose sight of the basic ingredients of understanding the disease. And there's two symptoms of the disease of alcoholism. Okay, one is the physical addiction, and the physical addiction comes after a period of drinking, to where my body physically changes and I have an allergy to alcohol. And when I put alcohol in my body, the phenomenon of craving starts. And I have no ability to stop drinking once I put alcohol in my body, okay? It's a physical change. The other one is the mental obsession. And the mental obsession is, when I was around alcohol, you know, and I can remember driving home from work, okay, at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, 5:30, and my mouth would start to salivate in anticipation of that first drink when I got home. It was all in that mental process, and I could not drink. So that's the mental obsession. The good news is there's a solution for both of those aspects of alcoholism. For the mental obsession, there's the spiritual experience. You know, in order to replace that mental obsession to drink, I have to replace it with a relationship of a higher power. The solution to the physical addiction is abstention. I have to not take that drink one day at a time, okay? The other thing, there's three aspects of the disease of alcoholism, okay? It's progressive. You know, once I cross that line and become an alcoholic, and if I continue to drink, the disease is going to progress. It's going to get worse. And I think we can each identify those things where it did get worse. The second thing is that it is chronic. There is no cure. You know, and one of our books has this analogy, and every time I share it, I think about my grandmother, because my grandmother allowed me to help her make pickles, okay? Dill pickles, you know? And I have this very favorable memory of pickles, right? Well, it's like taking a cucumber and putting it in brine, and it becomes a pickle. That cucumber becomes a pickle. I can take that pickle, I can cut it up, I can chop it, I can put it in other things, but it'll never go back to being a cucumber, okay? Once I'm an alcoholic, I can't get back to being a non-alcoholic. And the other one, and this is the tough one, is that it's fatal, okay? The disease of alcoholism will eventually take the life of the alcoholic if they continue to die or continue to drink. You know, my older brother, my oldest brother, was also an alcoholic. You know, and he was in the program, you know, and he died eventually from the chronic defects of alcoholism. As a sponsor, I've had two sponsees that died, and I was with them in the hospital room when they took their last breath. And they both died an alcoholic death. In my 19-plus years of sobriety, we recently had a meeting on the fatal nature of alcoholism, you know, and I have 8 people in my 19 years that I was really, really close with who have died from the disease of alcoholism. So when we say it's chronic, progressive, and fatal, those of us that have been here a while have seen that. But the beautiful thing for all of us that are here today is that there is a solution. It is not the only solution, but it is a solution. And that solution is recovery from alcoholism through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what I'd like to do now is to open it up for questions. You guys want to stand up, and we'll, any question is fair game. I think we have, what, like 12, 15 minutes? Any questions? I can share more stories, yes.
What can we do to help? And the other side of that is, what do we do without knowing that we are doing it that makes it worse?
I don't. For me, I'm not sure that, short of the intervention that my family had for me, I'm not sure there was anything that anyone could have ever said to me or done for me that was going to make a difference until I went to treatment and everything was taken away from me, and I had no other option but to try living a sober life that way, because I think I would have continued to drink until I killed myself. So that's it. That's how it was for me.
Yeah, and I think you're kind of speaking towards enabling a little bit. The my parents tried not to do that, and they came to a point where they just took their hands off. But for me personally, that had gotten to the point where nothing scared me at all. That wasn't. It was just because, you know, I was just void of any kind of emotion at all. And you know, I really think it was just intervention that got me to the treatment center to begin with and opened the door. But you know, there is a saying that we do say sometimes, and nobody likes to watch it, but don't deny them, you know, the pain that it's going to take to get them to come. That's a scary thing. It's a very scary thing. And I came in, I could say I came in and I never had to deal with it again, but after a year of being in the program, I had a relapse and went back out. And it spoke to exactly what Homer was saying about the progressiveness of it. I think in my mind I had sort of a reservation that didn't exist, and that, you know, after a period of time, I was going to be cured, I guess. I don't know. But the truth is that, you know, within a week, it was worse than it was when I came in. And it didn't take long. I mean, fortunately, I was able to get back in. But, you know, it alleviated all of that. So, and it brought back everything that I had leading into it, you know, the first time I came in. So, you know, it kind of takes what it takes sometimes to get folks in here. But just the awareness, I guess, that there are answers and solutions that are out there, and just sort of you know, planting the seed, I guess, sometimes is the best thing we can do, is just kind of, you know, a lot of sponsees I've had for a week, you know, just kind of planting seeds, and I've been through the same thing that Homer was talking about and had sponsees that didn't make it, and it's tough. It's really tough. Always being available to offer help is the biggest thing we can do, and just kind of spread an awareness of the solutions that are out there now.
Well, and I think if you can help them connect with someone in AA, if you, even if you just help them find a meeting, if you can get them to a meeting, and there's always people there that'll sort of reach out to someone that they know is new and give phone numbers, and then it really is up to that person at that point. It has to come from within, I believe, for it to truly take hold.
Is it true that you don't have to always hit the bottom before you do something about it?
Well, I think there's a lot of different bottoms. But I think for me at the time, what I hit was what I considered a bottom, or the bottom for me. I obviously could have gone lower, but in my mind, that was the bottom. My children were going to be gone. I was going to be kicked out of my home. And that is what made me actually change. But I don't know if that's true for everyone, but that is what happened to me. I had to be without any other options before I was going to embrace sobriety.
Yeah, I'm kind of like she is. I had to be down pretty low. But, And just the experience that I've had since I've been here, I have noticed that not only is that true, but it seems to become more prevalent. Starting to see younger folks realizing earlier on that they do have a problem and that they're coming in and getting help and, you know, stopping it, arresting it, you know, remission.
Yeah, I'd like to respond to that also. For me, I'm a fairly high bottom drunk. I'm a high bottom drunk. You know, up until the day I resigned from my job, I had a big corporate job and was very successful. But the good news is, I resigned from my job. Next day, I called and I called and interviewed the treatment centers that I was considering going to. Okay. And when I got to that first meeting, and I told you last week, it was in this church with the group that met in this church. And I thought the intake counselor had called ahead and told the people in AA what to talk about, because they talked about me for 45 minutes. I could identify. Okay, and that's the secret, is for the alcoholic to be able to identify with the people when they're sharing their recovery. What I do want to mention, intervention and treatment centers have been mentioned here today. We in AA have no official opinion about either one of those, okay? But we each have experience where they have worked. And I have experience where intervention didn't work. Two of the seven people that I talked about that died had intervention. And one of them never got over it. And eventually she died. Okay? But I can tell you there are a lot of people in AA that do have family interventions, and they work. I've participated in two. And unfortunately, the two that I participated in as not as a family member, but was invited by the family to kind of be there to help the person understand there was a solution, those are the two people that died. The disease of alcoholism is cunning, baffling, and powerful. Okay?
I'd like to respond to the question, what to do if you have someone drinking. In my experience, is suggest they go to Al-Anon. I don't know what the statistics are today, but when I went, if the family member went for 8 months, and 8 months, the person would be in treatment. And that certainly happened to us. So I think what you can do is suggest they go to Al-Anon, and they learn they work on themselves. The alcoholic has to work, be responsible for their actions. So I strongly recommend Al-Anon.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion.
Thank you.
Definitely.
I think question over here. Yes. And all you have to do is just go online and do a search for Al-Anon Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and you'll get the website. You'll both get the national website for Al-Anon Alateen, and you'll get the local website for the local chapter of the other thing that I would mention is that I always suggest to the family members that they go to a couple of open AA meetings. There's two kinds, open and closed. Closed meetings are limited to persons who have a problem with alcohol or have a desire to stop drinking. Open meetings are kind of like what we had here today. They're open to anybody that wants to attend. And most of the open meetings are speaker meetings where somebody tells a 45-minute version of their story. Once a family member goes to an AA meeting, two things happen. One, they have a lot more credibility with the alcoholics in their family, because they're now talking from their own experience of what they saw in the AA meeting. And the second thing is they know there's hope. Okay? If you go to an open AA meeting, you will almost invariably come out of there with hope for your loved one. Okay, there was another question over here, I think, maybe. Okay, another question. Yes.
I just wondered if you all could comment on, I don't know whether it's happened in your situation or not, in your AA groups, but if there are very few Naranon activities in this area, and I looked for those. We've had experience with drug addiction in our extended family, and in seeking help for that, it was very hard to find locally. I went to a Naranon chat, an Al-Anon meeting, and at that particular meeting, they said, you know, we really are not comfortable talking about drug addiction or have, it's just not our thing. And so I just wondered if you all could comment on that, and perhaps if somebody wanted to do something positive, I think it would be a wonderful thing if people at St. Paul's who were interested would sort of investigate all this and find out what the current availability is of Naranon chapters and that sort of thing in this area, because years back when I was looking for something, it just simply was not available.
Well, I know there's a lot of good NA meetings in town, but I also know that even my sponsor, she is primarily an NA member, but she attends AA meetings, and that happens all the time. And that is fine. We just keep it generic, and you talk about your addiction. You don't necessarily have to mention what drug it was that you were addicted to, and you see that a lot in meetings, and I would imagine maybe not the Al-Anon meeting that you went to, but there's probably others. If you just keep it generic that way and just say it's your addiction and just refer to it that way, usually people that's fine, and I see that a lot in the AA meetings. There's definitely people that have more than one addiction, and they choose to come to the AA meetings just because we have probably more of those than anything else, but it's definitely acceptable to come to an AA meeting no matter what your addiction might be.
Let me comment on that. One of the things that I have on my agenda after last week's meeting was to suggest to the recovery committee that next year you include Narcotics Anonymous and Naranon in another week session to address that. The opioid use at the young people's level today is just phenomenal. There is a fundamental change going on in the addiction in early age, and it's the opioids. And you know, the secret behind AA is singleness of purpose. You know, I have no experience with drugs, and I can't help anybody with drugs, you know, except encourage them to go to Narcotics Anonymous, okay? And I will spend time with them, but I won't sponsor them because I do not have that experience. And the ability to identify for the alcoholic or the addict to identify with the persons that they're talking to is essential in order for them to listen.
I was wondering how much alcoholism has to do with being inherited.
Let me answer this real quick because it's one of my favorite questions. My family of origin, it was significant. This is a personal opinion. There is a genetic component, but there are a lot of people that become alcoholic that have no genetic component. But there is a higher probability if your parents or grandparents were alcoholic, there's a higher incidence of alcoholism. We want to close on time. Have we passed the cards around? Okay. I have up here a meeting schedule that has all of the open meetings in Winston-Salem, and I have another sheet up here that says information on AA for the newcomer and for people who refer people to AA. So both of those are up here as well as the other pamphlets. I'd like to thank Rebecca and Daniel for being here today. And again, just remember, please respect the anonymity of the individuals here. Did everyone get a business card that you wanted? Okay, if not, there's more up here and there's more pamphlets. And I've asked a member of the recovery committee to read the AA promises, because this is what we in AA find when we get to the ninth of the 12th steps. Joe is a member of the recovery committee, and I've asked him to read the AA promises.
This will enhance my big mouth. And I'd just also like to thank Daniel and Rebecca. And I was kind of struck by the fact that they spoke today on a Sunday at a church, and what I heard were stories of redemption. The AA promises. One, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we'll be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. In 12, we will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. And that comes from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous on page 83 and 84. Thank you.
Again, I'd like to thank the recovery committee at St. Paul's for the opportunity for us to come and share the AA message. We will be up here. There's literature up here, and there's also a literature rack down on the first floor at the rear entrance that has most of these pamphlets on a permanent basis. And thank you very much. And we're here to answer any questions if you'd like to stick around. Thank you.